Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan. I'm J.D. Bunkus. Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy. Subscribe to the podcast. Do all those nice things. Been talking a lot today about the Oilers versus the media and how big a deal that is and blah, 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 blah. Our next guest wouldn't really know because he's a two-time Stanley Cup champion, so he's like, I won, so I wasn't like the Oilers. I can't relate to the Oilers. He also happened to play at some markets where they didn't really care. Aaron Ward, former NHL defensive, two-time Stanley Cup champion. What's up, man? How you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm good. I'm way better than what's going on in Edmonton. It seems like we have two factions kind of aligning themselves right now because there seems to be a fair amount of support for the media member from the media ranks, from individuals, I guess, that would know him very well. And I think from the player's perspective, they could all kind of relate to what's going on. And I don't know. I don't know if you guys have covered this ad nauseum, but I really honestly at some point have no issue with what Draisaitl did, because I think that the question crossed the line.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I do want to talk about it with you because I think that, you're right. There's definitely a circle the wagons thing here, right, where it's like, protect your own, you know, like protect. So I think that there are some media members that aren't looking at this through a fair lens. To me, it's a kind of a balanced one where I look at it as, hey, this is actually no big deal. I kind of like it when it gets a little contentious at times. I know media is not supposed to be the story, but to me, it's just more funny. I like when grown men say you're pissy at each other. It's just funny. But you are a media member and you are a former player. Like, you're both. You get to straddle the line here. And it seems like you take still umbrage with, you know, the way that Jim Matheson comported himself, and that there is sort of a line crossing when it comes to these moments.
I think the amazing part for me is how I filter Twitter, how I filter social media now, and how I filter mainstream media is, if we literally took the opportunity to switch roles, right? If Draisaitl had put Matheson in the same position and asked him the question in the same manner, same line of questioning with the same tone, how would we react? We would highly likely take the player to task over a lack of accountability for respect and just out of being out of line. So here's my deal. I'm going to go from small to large. Small is this. Draisaitl is unlikely the guy you want to go at. Right, so he's done his job. He's leading the league. He's tops in scoring. I mean, he's doing all the things. If you honestly thought the guy, this may go for everybody in the locker room, if the guy honestly, who's played as long as he has and been as elite as he is, had the answer to what to, an air quote, fix, do you not think he would at this point be forthcoming with the first answer? Right, you ask the question, what can you fix? And his answer comes with a certain amount of disdain that you and I and the least perceptive person in the world can still identify out of his answer by saying everything. That's enough for me to say, huh, not only do I have almost like we're on the stand in court, like a witness, an uncooperative witness, can I treat him a certain way? I would have walked away at this point, but instead Matheson decides to go back at him. And I don't think there's anything more you can get out of a player at that point, because he's on a public stage. This isn't the old days of media members and hockey players or athletes getting that one-on-one opportunity. I've had plenty of interactions with media members that didn't go well, but it happened on a smaller scale, right? So I got to talk to, and I'll give you an example. I took issue in Boston with a guy named Fudo Shinazawa for the way his line of questioning, how he went about doing his interviews. But here's the deal. We buried the hatchet because when I got angry, I either didn't answer his question, we confronted the issue, we had a conversation, we walked away. Now we put, you know, press conferences on steroids by putting guys, and I understand why, for COVID reasons, on a pedestal. They got to sit at a desk and everybody gets to fire away. And there's a level of competition between the media members to get their question in there. In the media market, as you're talking about, some of the markets I've played in that matter and some don't. You're now in Edmonton, where almost for the 11th year in a row, Edmonton is being Edmonton. They have no identifiable system. We use the word identity. We don't have an identity for the Edmonton Oilers. The fixes that they made in bringing in certain guys just aren't – it's not working for them. Darnell Nurse can't play 40 minutes a game to remedy the defensive issues that exist in Edmonton. And the guys who are – producing are the guys that are expected. They lack continuity. They lack depth. They lack the ability to cover up the mistakes. You can't outscore your mistakes over and over and over, even though Edmonton tries. So going back to that press conference, I think there's a lack of perceptiveness by a Hockey Hall of Fame media member that should, in the moment, realize, hey, I've got Draisaitl who just doesn't want to talk to me. Then, clearly, I use the word pissy. At that point, you have stepped into a level of childishness in trying to address a hockey player that just has blown up the entire situation. Why continue? At that point, I think when the pissy word came up, I think Draisaitl would have been best to stand up and walk out, but he didn't. He sat there. And what we got was a very obvious tale of a very bad relationship that has pre-existed this one interview between that player and this media member. So going back to everybody's drawn a line in the sand, like I put something on Twitter saying, hey, listen, I'm with Leon Draisaitl in the fact that I feel like he doesn't have to answer the question further. And I'd say 95% of the fan base agreeing. And then I got 95% of the past media members coming at me about, who the hell are you? You're a past media guy. How the hell can you say that? So, I don't know. It's a very weird situation. But you know what? The funny part is the weird seems to go with the Edmonton season and seasons as of late.
I think you nailed it, man. I really do. And I've had some different thoughts on it today, and I do look at Draisaitl as a bit immature in it. But I really do think that perspective is as good as someone can say on the entire thing. Like, I really do. I think you just hit, like, every single marker of it. And you can tell that you put it on Twitter last night, and you getting all those questions from media people made you think about it all night. So you got it.
I had to filter my I had to filter my response to all these things and not be personally invested. Like, I get where these guys are coming from. They have a job to do. I just don't think the job was going to get done the way you're asking those questions.
Aaron, let's pivot to a much better hockey media market where everyone's always reasonable and friendly, the Toronto Maple Leafs. Oh, also, happy birthday, by the way. I know we're a day or two late here, but...
Oh, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, it's the one birthday before half century, so we didn't really celebrate that much.
Yeah, the last one we acknowledge, right?
Yep.
Aaron, so the Toronto Maple Leafs have had a lot of questions around their defensive core this year, and obviously that top pair has been just fine to great. Jake Muzzin has struggled a fair amount, though, and he's gonna miss some time here now. But what were you seeing in his struggles before he hit the shelf? There's some worry here that that's maybe not correctable over this last half of a season, and it's a defenseman aging out a little bit early here. What are you seeing with Muzzin, and you know, can this time off, obviously for a bad reason, maybe have a benefit in the long run in terms of his health and his readiness for the playoffs?
I think absences sometimes, especially for defensemen, can help with resetting yourself, understanding your game. It's a chance to step away from the game. One of the things Scotty Bowman used to do for his defensemen, and I was actually party to this, he never would play his younger defensemen in the playoffs because he wanted them to sit in the stands. I literally, in 1997, sat in the stands with Jamie Pusher, Anders Ericsson, and we watched the first game where Detroit played St. Louis because he wanted us to understand the difference of style and the tension in the air and how the game is played. So there's always a perspective where all of a sudden as a defenseman, you sit out, whether you're sitting up in the press box or wherever you are, and there's a realization that you can process the game differently as you look at it. It's such an easy game to play sitting in the stands or in the press box or watching on TV. It's not until you get in that reactionary position of being on the ice that all of a sudden things start to complicate because it's happening exactly in the moment and you can't see the ice in the same landscape. For Muzzin, I'll say this. Muzzin draws a difficult task, only equal to Justin Hall, in that if you look at the numbers that exist for Toronto, those two guys, so Hall's first and then Muzzin second, they get put in a position of having to take the most offensive faceoffs. They're always generally put in a bit of an inferior position because their expectation as defensive defensemen, stylistically, they've got to do more on that end. They don't take the easier faceoffs that exist in the offensive zone. I think there's another thing that goes with being a defensive defenseman on a very offensive team, a team that is very gifted in terms of puck movement speed. If you think about all the guys top to bottom, the style of the Toronto Maple Leafs is much different from, say, the New York Islanders. You see how New York's doing. Guys like Marner, and I was a little bit worried about Marner not being in the lineup for a period of time. You have so many guys on this Toronto Maple Leafs team that carry the puck across the blue. They're an incredibly successful team possession-wise. The result of that style of play, though, puts a lot of pressure on the D, because when you carry the puck across, there's a significant amount of turnovers resulting from that. So I work for a company, SMT, who does the player and puck tracking for the National Hockey League, and I get to see the analytics that come from it. And I generally stay in my lane. I keep the most basic of analytics at my disposal. And if you look at Toronto, Toronto is incredibly good. They're just outside, I say, right now, the top three or four in the National Hockey League. They're up there. They still have a significant amount of games to play. They're like four or five behind the league, but they're there. The difficulty they have is stylistically where they are in the regular season. They give up a lot of chances in the way in which they play. And this is one of those things that's their Achilles heel come playoff time, when, you know, offensive chances are so limited and they play still the same way. You give up a decent amount of chances. You put pressure on certain players and in certain situations. So for me, I think some of the pressure, some of the players succumb, specifically the defensemen like Muzzin, as you're talking, and I group Hall into there. There's an amount of pressure that comes with the result of the style of play. And they don't always, the results don't always play itself out. So you kind of fall back on you. The eye test is, oh, he's getting beat a ton, right? I think back to the LA game and Muzzin a month or two ago, and same thing with Hall, that sometimes speed gets them, but it's because of the speed has an opportunity to start from way down the other end versus a turnover that happens and the guy's not at full speed. It puts a lot of pressure on your goaltending, the style of play, and it puts a lot of pressure on your decor.
So it sounds like you don't think that those guys have changed much then from a year ago, that this is more of, hey, this is now the breaks of a schedule that you're facing better competition.
I'm gonna say this. It's not that it hasn't changed. It's okay, how do I best put this? You're the Toronto Maple Leafs. Teams ramp up to play you. And I would say this, I could care less, and it's not a spite, this isn't a shot at the Toronto Maple Leafs. If I'm a Leafs player, if I'm a Leafs fan, my value in the regular season isn't near as much as playing in the playoffs. I think about the game differently come playoff time. Now the Toronto Maple Leafs are a measuring stick. With the depth of talent, with the notoriety of being the Toronto Maple Leafs, teams come to play you different. It's the same way I felt about playing Toronto as I did with Montreal over my career. I wanted to kick them around, especially in their building. So one of the difficulties of playing for this organization is every team is ready, razor sharp, ready to play you every given night, because there's more on the line than just the 2 points. There's like a notoriety of beating the Toronto Maple Leafs for everybody that you grew up playing around. You always want to be able to say, I got the Leafs number. So with that, I'm saying these guys are encountering more preparation from teams keying on, right? The fact that we have numbers on every single player and you know certain qualities or lack of quality about a guy, they can key on you. Teams and players have a tendency to come into town and try and elevate their performance against certain guys and try and exercise weaknesses. And yeah, I mean, like, I don't think there's been a ton of change from the team or these guys. I think that just competition, in light of, you know, the more you go on, the more of a body of work you have to evaluate certain guys and certain opponents, they're keying on them.
So you mentioned the Toronto Maple Leafs as kind of like a measuring stick. And I guess my question to you is, how do they compare to those other two top teams in the Atlantic? You got the Lightning and the Panthers, who have played more games and have more points, but are definitely the two teams that have a lot of firepower, have a lot of, a measuring stick as well. So I think my question for you, who is the actual team to beat in the Atlantic? And is that the Leafs still?
So I still think the team to beat right now is Florida. And I can't figure out where the mojo comes from. You lose your coach, you get a young guy in Brunette, and maybe that's a motivating factor. Maybe Brunette was very much schooled and just basically assuming the same role and the same mentality and the same system that was in place. But this is a team that seems like night in, night out to play a high level of consistent hockey. Goaltending back there has a pretty decent tandem. And the decor as a whole, Florida almost reminds me of my 2016, where everybody, no matter if you're a highly skilled guy or you're a plug, I mean, Radko Gudas seems to be looking like Bobby Orr in the case. Like there's an expectation everybody plays the same style. So what you get from Florida, and why I'm saying they're the measuring stick right now, is from shift to shift, as the opponent, you're constantly on your heels. Like Barkov is utterly amazing. Marchessault is utterly amazing. But the cast of characters next to come are just as quality and supportive. And I feel like Florida is almost what we talk about. Edmonton hasn't really found their identity. Florida plays consistently to their identity every night. I would put Toronto close to them. I don't hold them as the measuring stick quite yet of those three teams. But I feel like with more games, with more of like Marner being in the lineup and the lines being together, I think there's an opportunity to be on par with Florida. But Florida still right now is my divisional leader in terms of setting the standard.
And they benefit from being the anti-Leafs. Like, no, I'm guessing that you never played with anybody who was like, I want to be the one who has Florida's number, man. I want to be the guy. Eight Panthers fans are like, oh, I hate when this guy comes to town. Boy, oh, boy.
Well, here's the other thing about the difference between those three teams you mentioned, and I'll take it from an off-ice perspective. How many times over February have you had opponents come into your city and say, oof, can't wait to get to the beach, get distracted. I'm looking forward to sitting in the sun, by the pool. Maybe I'll go to an outdoor bar. It doesn't happen. So there is that. And I can't discount the fact that when teams go to the Florida environments, they do look forward to stepping away. Where if I go to Toronto, I'm there to play hockey. I'm getting ready. I'm excited. I'm saying now, my most favorite game against Toronto is if I ever drew the Saturday night game against Hockey Night in Canada. It shouldn't be said, but you got my best game. I mean, I was ready for the time and the place and the magnitude of that network televising that game.
Yeah, as a fan of this team,
you don't get that excited about the Sunshine Network.
Yeah, I'm shocked to hear this. I can't believe that, you know, players didn't come face your Carolina teams and go like, wow, what a night. I can't believe we're in this building. Like, wow, what a prestigious place to play. Aaron Ward.
Hey, we used that to our advantage.
Yeah, I know you did. You got two
That's
cups.
Why they started the storm surge, to make it a bit more fun, right?
Yeah, they got pigs there. Exactly. They got storm surge, everything to get a little bit of attention. Yeah, the pig is more famous than the players there. I really do believe that.
Unless you're David Ayers.
Yeah, yep. That's it. That's it. Aaron Ward, two-time Stanley Cup champion. Thanks for making time for us today, man. This was great.
No problem. Thank you.
See you, man. I liked his perspective today. And I do like it when someone is in the media now. Like, I will admit, like yesterday I shot a Twitter message to my buddy Mark Mathod, and it was very friendly, and the two of us were like, yeah, joking around a little bit. But he said that Draisaitl, he said he was either classy or he took the high road or something like that. And I was like, come on, that's a bit of a stretch. And now that I'm looking back on it, like throughout the show, I'm kind of thinking, yeah, you know what? Maybe he did take a little bit more of the high road, even though he had the initial, you have all the answers, you know, kind
you
of
know
a
everything or whatever.
Yeah, like that was a bit unnecessary, but yeah, whatever. He could have been worse. Had someone been like pissy, he could have actually he kept it together, did whatever, and so yeah. I think that's what it comes down to, though, so much for hockey people, and I think this is a hockey culture thing too, where it's like, you know, we spend a lot of time with hockey always going like, hey, it's a team sport, it's all about the team, it's not about the individuals. But then whenever like something like the Oilers situation happens where the team sucks but the individual is great, everyone goes, well, it's not Dreisaitl's fault. I'm like, huh? Well, which is it? Like, what are we doing here? So McDavid and Draisaitl are the two best players in a sport where we care the most about the quote-unquote team, but then we just they get to be not held responsible for anything when it goes poorly from a media coverage standpoint or a fan coverage standpoint. It is a strange one to me as someone who grew up loving basketball as much as he loved watching hockey.
It's a little tough. Have you ever seen the movie Mr. 3000?
No,
Bernie Mac baseball
Bernie
movie.
Mac? Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. Incredible and very underrated baseball movie. But the star who is like I love it. It's phenomenal. The star of the team gets asked at one point, like, why the team's not playing better. And he, like, loses it and, like, has hit his frustration point with those questions. And he's like, I'm paraphrasing here, but he's like, if these guys were out there hitting like I'm hitting, if these guys were out there running bases like I'm running bases, and that's how he hangs on his team. And I feel like that's kind of like what I guess what people would have expected. Like, it's just such a hard spot for Draisaitl to not, like, it's hard to answer that question with anything more than, hey, we're in a bad spot and it's frustrating. Because if you get more specific, the logical endpoint is, hey, if everyone else was playing like me and Connor are playing, we wouldn't be in this situation.
I can't imagine any time in my career if our team was losing or we were on a bad streak that our all-star or captain would be like, well, if everyone else picked it up, maybe we'd play. Like, that would be such a bad locker room move. So I think now when we look at the full picture, I think he did what he kind of had to do. I don't know if maybe that's last ditch resort to be like, everybody sucks, we got to pick it up. Maybe that would, that's down the line.
Yes. Like, yes. And he did say everything, which includes him, but
I think JD's speaker just died, eh?
Yeah, so
he sounded like a robot.
I thought that was on me for a second.
No,
because no. Someone stomped over my little.
I just heard
my
Vic go in my ear. Ooh! I was like, okay. And then all of a sudden, I was gone. So I guess I turned into a robot. All I'm saying is that he did say everything. Draisaitl said everything. Mm-hmm. So that is taking on himself. But he did just seem sour. Like, I do think that the context of it does matter just a slight bit, where he was sour. Maybe it is their personal relationship. Maybe we're extrapolating too much on it. But I don't mind star players, and maybe Leon has already done this, but I do think Leon does have some obligation to the fans. They do the whole, like, the player doesn't owe anybody anything. I disagree with that, fundamentally. You make $8.5 million a year because people want to watch you play hockey. They want that team to win. They take pride. You wear that city's name on your jersey whenever you play. You play in front of that city. You represent that city. So you do owe people something. We've gone too far with the athlete doesn't owe anybody anything thing. Like, I do want to hear from Leon what he thinks is wrong, and I would like a composed answer at some point, if I was a fan anyways, as to what he thinks some of the issues that are with the team that he can be directly involved with. That's what I will say. He doesn't have to throw his goalie under the bus, even if that might have been the direction of the question. He doesn't need to throw his GM under the bus. But I would be genuinely curious as to if there is something that Leon Draisaitl thinks he can get better at. Because I don't think that he's infallible just because he scores the most goals on the Oilers. That's all I'll say. Let's take a break. Let's come back. And let's talk to Chris Long. I'm stoked about this. What a great guest. Daniele, just a lot of dingers from Daniele lately. Just, you know, nobody, speaking of Mr. 3000 or whatever, you know, maybe he's the star player where he's like, if everybody hit like me, we'd be a little different. Let's take that break. Let's talk to Chris Long next on the Fan Morning Show. Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, JD Bunkus, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ailish Forfar, JD Bunkus, Blake Murphy. That's Mac Miller, who would have been 30 today. Rest in peace. Let's bring in our next guest. Chris Long, former NFL defensive lineman, two-time Super Bowl champion, host of the Green Light Podcast. Good morning, Chris. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, how are y'all? Thanks for having me.
Well, we're doing well. I got a quick one off the bat for you. I think you've seen the Niners walking out of the locker room with a big boom box. They've been doing that lately. What would be the song you would play if you're taking your defense out of the locker room for a big game?
Well, I mean, you know, we... in Philly, when we won that Super Bowl, we're kind of associated with Dreams and Nightmares, the Meek Mill song. So it was a bit of a cop-out. But when we came out in Minneapolis, you know, before we beat the Pats, we played that. And, of course, Brady this week beat the Eagles, put it in his highlight video that he put on social media afterwards. So I'll go Dreams and Nightmares.
Nice.
Brady, like, wow, you couldn't get that Super Bowl, but you steal the song. That seems like a passive aggressive move by him. Like, Brady's smart with his social media. That feels like one he wouldn't miss. Like, he knew what he was doing.
Oh, he had that in his, yeah. I mean, I just had Rob Ninkovich on my show yesterday, who played with me in New England, and, you know, knows Tom well, and we wondered out loud, like, do you think Brady was it was personal for him this weekend, and it felt like it was. I mean, yes. He really carved up, and then he had the highlight video afterwards. So,
I do want to talk to you about both those teams, but I'm going to start with this because, like, yeah, speaking of your Philadelphia team, right? I usually now go into the postseason and ask, you know, who is the dog mask team? Who's the team that everybody's sort of sleeping on that is going to rally around being the underdogs? And it's especially interesting this year because we have all the best teams remaining, I think. Like, maybe you could quibble with one or two of these teams, but it looks like we got everybody good. That's why everyone's rich right now, because everybody's gambling picks hit, because we all bet on the good teams, we all bet on the favorites, and bing, they all hit. Awesome. except for the Niners. Yeah. So let me just ask you, Chris Long, one of the inventors of the dog mask team, one of the OGs, who is this year's dog mask team? Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're the 49ers, and, you know, like, I did bet the Niners, so I do feel this isn't, you know, revisionist history for me. I felt like their matchup with Dallas was a function of, hey, Dallas is just not built for this spot. Their offense has been, you know, off kilter since Dak's calf injury. They don't look like a real deal defense without Micah Parsons on the field. So I just didn't think Dallas was ready this year. I don't know if they'll ever be ready, but, you know, San Francisco is the team they didn't want to see. That played out. I think San Francisco's a win away from thinking, like, hey, we could be playing in the Super Bowl. And if San Francisco gets in the dance, I mean, like, they're the team that can beat anybody. Now, they can lose to damn near anybody, too, because they can turn the ball over. You know, they have some spots in their secondary that you worry about. But if the four-man rush is getting there, this feels like a team that can go toe-to-toe with anybody. Now, Green Bay can go any which way, but if they find a way to squeak this win out, they probably play, in my mind, they probably play the Rams next week. And the Rams are terrified of this team. So, you know, if you're a Niner, you're thinking, hey, we are 60 minutes away from the only thing standing in our way from being back in that Super Bowl are the Rams. We just beat 2 weeks ago, and we beat them earlier in the season as well. And I also think the Bengals, people sleep on the Bengals. I actually think they're for real. But, of course, they have to beat a team who feels disrespected this weekend in the Titans.
Dude, I if I'm Sean McVay, that's the nightmare. I almost, like, if I can find out the Niners end up winning this game, I'm almost punting. I'm just losing to Brady because I don't want my whole legacy to be Kyle Shanahan puts me in my pocket every week. Like, that's just a tough. Like, that's so tough. And there's no way he's beating him. He's never going to beat Shanahan. Like, he wins it. He beats him. That's his Super Bowl. That's more his Super Bowl than the actual Super Bowl.
No question. I mean, it's starting to become a thing where, and they're, you know, Shanahan and McVay, both great coaches. I think the Rams are for real. But it's just become one of these things. And, like, I don't think bettors ever really catch up to it either. I mean, like, there's money on the Rams anytime these two teams play. And I'm like, until they prove otherwise, just bet the Niners. You know, that game to end the season, you thought if the Rams were going to win any of them, it would be that one, the way Jimmy threw that pick in the red zone. Stafford had that huge third and six. It was a beautiful ball, backed up. And then in the corner of the end zone, that touchdown to go up. You're thinking it's all coming together. Von Miller has a big sack. If that was going to be the game, you figured that was it. But there's two in a row again for them another year.
So you also played with New England. You had Ninkovich on your podcast. And again, people should go subscribe, download, listen to that themselves. The Green Light podcast. But what do you guys think Belichick does here? Because that just was such a stomping. That was so embarrassing that even for that organization, it's one that we're going to remember with Belichick's moments. Like, not one punt, not one punt. Oof. Is this a teardown? What does he do here? He moves some bodies out of there. They end up having a reconfiguration. Like, they spent a lot of money on free agents. I know that Judon was beat up, and that hurts that defense big time. But how does that organization approach an embarrassment of that level?
Well, it's tough because I had thought for a while that, you know, and I still believe they were a pretty decent football team. The Patriots had a high floor. Well, like, the floor was lower than I thought, you know, to lose – by 40 points to a division rival that you kind of owned for better part of three decades. This one hurts, and it doesn't just hurt in a vacuum. It hurts because you know what you're going to have to do to keep up in that division, and it ain't what you have offensively right now. Like, their run game solid. I think, you know, Bill deserves credit for some of these draft picks, you know, some signings like Kendrick Bourne, you know, Judon for a while. But you can see if they have to generate pressure, if they don't have a guy that can win one-on-one, it's just not the same. And you have to be able to win one-on-ones to beat Josh Allen. You also, it's going to be hard to just sit back there in zone and him pick you apart in conversion situations. And you're looking down the barrel of like what the next 5-7 years looks like. And yes, Mac Jones is a good, solid quarterback. He might be a really good quarterback if he develops. But who's he throwing the ball to? So if I'm Bill Belichick, and I know they haven't drafted particularly well at the skill positions offensively, but you have to go out and get some talent that Mac Jones can get the ball to. Some guys who hit, like, I don't know where the next Deebo Samuel is, but go get that guy. You know, you're looking at a team that you're going to have to score with. Now, the second matchup I thought is most indicative of the three is, like, what this matchup looks like, and that was the Patriots just not being able to quite keep up. The game the other night, the dam broke. You know, Buffalo's been waiting for that for 20, 30 years, and I think that was kind of a Super Bowl kind of vibe for them. Not to say that they don't want to win the whole damn thing and that they can't, but this thing felt huge for them. It was a big monkey off their back. And those fans didn't have any time in that stadium in the postseason last year, remember. So this was just a big deal, and the dam broke. I think, though, that the Patriots, Bills second matchup is the one that's most indicative of, okay, what do we have to deal with the next 5 years? And that means we got to get Josh off the field better. And we got to keep up when we do find ourselves down.
So if we're looking at that Bills matchup, the line has moved already significantly now. Bills are plus 1.5. I guess my question is, Josh Allen had like a history-setting, record-setting game against the Patriots. But let's say he kind of, you know, plays average in his next game. Do you think that they're deep enough or strong enough to overcome the Chiefs if he doesn't have another one of these historical games?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think they can beat them. I also, you know, my kind of revisionist pick for the Super Bowl was Green Bay Buffalo. That was going into the postseason. But I do think, though, in a vacuum, this game, if I'm looking at it, and part of this is my brother plays for the Chiefs, so I just think the Chiefs are so hard to beat twice in 1 year, and especially going to Arrowhead. Like, you're talking about the first game, the Chiefs turned the ball over a bunch. I mean, Josh didn't really have to throw the ball a lot in the first half. The Bills were in control. And at this point, you remember that the Chiefs' defense was considered the worst in the league. I mean, people were just, you know, it was jokes all the time when it came to that defense, and they deserved it. But they figured some things out, as they often do under Spagnuolo. And they've improved. I think Buffalo, having played what felt like a Super Bowl a little bit this week, is going to make it hard now to go on the road and win twice at Arrowhead. So I actually like the Chiefs. And, you know, you talk about the line. Like, I had guessed that the Bills were going to be probably 2-point favorites or 1.5-point favorites, but obviously that thing has ended up squarely flipping with the line moving a little bit down from 3. And I think that tells you something. So I'm betting the Chiefs. I'm pulling for the Chiefs. My brother plays for the Chiefs. And I think it's just going to be a great, great football game. And I'm really excited about it.
I can't tell now. Now I'm all screwed up because I thought I was going to kind of bet the Bills value. And now I'm like, wait. Does your info with your brother make it more confident that pick?
Or
are you biased? No, I know, but I'm like, are you biased now? Or I'm like, is it too much? But I'm like, yeah, that sounds right. He's got the vibe of the room down. But that's, dude, so yeah, your brother Kyle plays for the Chiefs. And I am curious what his thoughts were, without divulging state secrets, about everybody basically was like, oh, the Chiefs got figured out on offense. They just decided to drop the safeties back further. I was like, what? That's it? Like, that was the secret to the Chiefs?
That
was
easy.
Just, yeah, it was like, okay. Seems like somebody would have figured that out before. But the offense wasn't the same this year. And I've always just wondered if that's just a fatigue thing where they're basically like, LeBron in the regular season, and not now because the Lakers suck, and so he has to play hard every night, but on a regular time where he's like, yeah, I'm not playing defense today. Like, I don't care. We're going to get to the playoffs, and I'm going to be LeBron. And feeling that way a little bit with that offense where even in the NFL, it's kind of hard to just maintain that level of excellence week in, week out, especially given all the extra games that they've tacked on with playoffs. Just what did he think was up with the offense this year? Like that we overblew it or he had concerns? Tell us the truth. Give us that.
I mean, like, you know, not really coming from him because he was a new guy. Like, you know, he was more just marveling at the process there. You know, like, hey, Andy Reid's amazing. Like, you know, yeah, people are counting us out, but I see the work every day in practice. And, like, you know, Mahomes is so locked in. Like, the one thing I did hear from my brother is, like, he's just a Jordan-level competitor. I mean, he just wants to compete at everything. And you can really see that. Some guys are just really wired to just go in the backyard and play. And this kid, like, I think he probably exhausted his parents, asked them to go in the backyard and play. Like, he's just that type of kid. He's a gamer. So I think in the same vein, from my point of view, when I watched this team this year, I mean, yes, teams making them earn it was a thing. And Patrick had to kind of say, I'm going to take the profit, even though our checkdowns are like 12 yards and a lot of people would like those checkdowns. Like, it's an adjustment, not just going for the jugular every drive. There was a point in the season where they started to string these 15-play drives together and, you know, a little bit more gap scheme runs, a little bit more, you know, pound the football, control the clock. And it happened in conjunction with the defense playing better. You know, so I think it was kind of systems resist change. And with the lack of a good number two this year, like, you know, an obvious number two early in the season, and then Mahomes throw in some picks and, you know, some turnovers. And I think a lot of them were frustration turnovers where it was just like, hey, I'm tired of moving the ball down the field. Like, I want to go for the throat. And next thing you know, you got a tip and an overthrow and a pick. I think all this happened at the right time, and I feel really good about this team in the postseason now. I mean, the Bills beat them up, but this was a totally different team. And I love the Bills, and I'm really torn because I'm rooting for my brother, but it sucks that I have to root against the Bills this week, but it is what it is. I'm a Chiefs fan.
Yeah. Yeah, you're the Jackson Mahomes of the offensive line.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't have stock yet, but maybe if I can.
You should do it. You should go to the game and get him to teach you how to do a TikTok. And, like, you guys do a little dance. I think it would be awesome. It would be so cool.
That'd be a good way to start my TikTok career. So you got to go. Maybe I'm going to sign up today, and then I'll be ready.
Jackson Mahomes. God. As like, there's never been a greater discrepancy between the greatness of one brother and the next. Honest to God, it might be the biggest gap between two guys in the history of humanity. So let me just get your thoughts on this. I'm a Seahawks fan. You're an Eagles representative. Let's make a deal. The Seahawks offer you, the Eagles, Russell Wilson. You got to give all three of those first-round picks back in this year's draft. Do you say yes or do you say no?
Man, I don't know, because are the Eagles much better than they were this year? I mean, like, you know, I love Russ and everything, and I'd love to get him in Philly, but you're going to need those three first-round picks. Like, the defense is aging. There's issues there. Like, the offensive line's pretty good, but it's tough to keep a group like that together. I think you could probably use another wideout. I'd look long and hard at it, but I would just caution people in Philly, you know, like if you give the farm up. Now, Howie struggled in the first round to find wide receiver talent, so that's one thing. I would caution you to think that a quarterback's just going to make you, you know, a contender all of a sudden. You know what? I can't say the F word here, but F it. You know, I'll pull the trigger because it is a quarterback league, but I wouldn't expect us to be like a 13-win team immediately. You know, I do think they still have work to do on the defensive side of the ball.
I think you 100% do it. and I don't even love it. Like, I was looking at, like, those are set picks, right? It's one thing if Philly's getting asked for 3 first-round picks. It's this year, it's the next year, and you can end up with this, like, Jamal Adams thing where you just are praying.
Yeah, you know. You pick.
Yeah. It's like, oh, God. Like, you know what these picks are. They're just one draft. Like, you go through one draft. It's like, okay, we had one draft where we didn't have first-round pick. No big deal. We got Russell Wilson. Done.
Yeah, and, you know, like, Jalen played well in spots this year, and I think he's, like, if where he's played himself into is a situation where, hey, listen, if we don't find anything that falls into our laps, like, you're the guy next year. And then you can reassess a year after that. You know, maybe some of these picks this year get parlayed into a higher pick next year. I mean, there's a whole lot of different directions you can go. But, again, they find themselves in this weird situation where, you know, the season ends and everybody in Philly was rejoicing because they won the trade. I mean, they won the trade. Like, Carson did not play well down the stretch this year. And the pick was great and everything. And Jalen's been solid. But, you know, don't conflate winning the trade with, hey, we have now the quarterback of the next 5 to 7 years. We don't know that. But if this QB carousel yields nothing, if you don't take a flyer on a Malik Willis or, you know, Corral or I don't know who, Kenny Pickett. Like, if you don't take a flyer on one of these guys, which I don't think Howie Roseman is going to do because I think Jalen's his lifeline, then Jalen's your guy next year, and then you can reassess.
Well, Chris Long, thanks so much for joining us. 2-time Super Bowl champion and future TikTok star, potentially.
Yeah, we believe in you. Buying your TikTok
We believe in you. We'll check you out later on the app. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
See you, buddy.
Thank you all. Take it easy.
All I got to say is, go, little rock star. That's what he's going to need to know.
That's again, you're talking to two old people. Like, you have to remember this sometimes, where it's like we're here, like, in our wheelchairs. We got our canes. We're leaned over, and you're like, go, little rock star. I'm like, is that
go, little rock star?
Is that a TikTok?
That's all he's got to do is just go, little rock star. On his TikTok career, okay. His brother, Josh Allen. Yeah.
God, I would never admit this to him, but, like, I'm so glad I have a good brother. I just, like, Patrick Mahomes has to be aware of how much his brother is despised. And I've always thought it must be hilarious watching all those Chiefs teammates pretend like, oh, cool TikTok, Jackson. You know, like, because you got to create.
Buddy.
Well, he still obviously loves his brother, and Jackson's around all the time. And if you, I don't follow him on TikTok. What is that?
What is that noise, guys?
I don't know. That was like a. That sounded
That's
like.
That's not my place.
Oh, is that Blake? Oh, the cat? Uh-uh. Was your cat doing a cat thing? What was that? Oh, fire alarm. Oh, I thought it was like. I was like, Blake, do you got to go pull your cat out from underneath the couch? Like, they get.
The cat is stuck.
Oh, Blake's fire alarm keeps going. So, but yeah, so his teammates obviously see Jackson in the crew, in the entourage, because Jackson Mahomes and his wife are, like, constantly doing TikToks, and they always get pushed over all the rest of social media, right? If you follow, like, Instagram accounts or whatever, there's a ton of them that just make fun of Jackson. But Patrick's with him all the time. He's a big-time family unit dude. And I don't know. I'm sure his brother is better with him in person. But just thinking about all his teammates and having to pretend like Jackson. Oh, Jackson, you danced on the memorial for Sean Taylor. That's cool, man. You're a cool guy. That's real sick tribute to him. Thank you for that, Jackson. No, do another dance, Jackson. This is really sweet. I love it. You're the greatest teammate. I love you. Oof.
Makes me cringe. Like, secondhand embarrassment is, like, the worst feeling to have in the world. But when you get secondhand embarrassment for someone, it's the worst. Yeah.
That's maybe a good. That's a good draft someday. Worst family members.
Yeah. Wow, well, oh, I love
get
that.
Us into
that
trouble.
One in yeah. The back pocket.
Yeah.
I love
there
it.
Might be a certain somebody that would get us in trouble here in the city. Maybe. You know. Maybe. Maybe. Just maybe. You probably think about it. Yeah.
I
just
think
like
about
it. Between the lines. It's like, oh, you just ponder real heavy and real hard. Spend a lot of time just breaking your old brain on that one. So yeah, Patrick Mahomes. I got to tell you, Ailish, you're not going to like this. That.
I know. I know what you're going to say. He made me feel very, very nervous about my Buffalo
Bills.
It's
like it's the Chiefs, you know? And you beat them in the regular season.
And just a simple statement of, it's tough to beat them twice in one season. I said,
you know
what? Simplistic answer and simplistic way to put it, you're right. You are right, buddy.
Oh, Blake, you can talk again?
Yeah, you guys got to keep an eye on the chat. I was trying to let you know that I'm back. But yes, Ailish, the counter to that, I guess, would be it's also hard to eliminate a team from the playoffs two years in a row. So that can cut both ways.
Unless you're the Boston Bruins.
I'm back in betting the Bills. That was a good counterpoint by Blake. Good guy. I'm a weather vane on this game. Can I tell you something? I might not bet that game. I might just enjoy it like a normo. You know?
No, you won't. Yes. You absolutely have no capacity to enjoy a game like a normal.
You are a complete degenerate.
No, I might watch it like a normal. No, you know, I don't normally bet on the Toronto teams, right? Like, I bet props for Raptors, but for Leafs games, I usually don't bet them because I don't like to be influenced by the way I bet a game. Like,
I am going to reveal your secrets on Monday when you claim Friday. And you claim on social, you have not bet this
but
game.
Now I'll know.
And then I've got screenshots of you like at the 14:55 mark of the first quarter, sending me in-game bets.
What are the normals like?
He'll be on Twitter like, Don't be suspicious.
Fine, I'll probably bet it. But either way, maybe I'll do what you guys do and I'll just bet both sides. I'll make $8 like Blake makes trying to middle, or I'll just win nothing.
Just $8.
You middle every game, you're going to make a profit in the long run. Yeah, that's the strategy. So we should. I mean, I don't want to do a collective bankroll, but yes, that's the strategy. I will middle games in the most boring way possible, hand that money over to Ailish for her just $5 bets, and then we can roll it into, you know, roll the profits into JD's stuff at the end.
That was great getting Chris Long. Tons of great guests today. We were loaded. Chris Long, Aaron Ward. We had Jeff Merrick on earlier today. Tons and tons. If you missed the show, so subscribe to the podcast, listen to that sucker. As always, the Wake and Rake was at 8:30. All those bets were there. If you want to play along, you want the free $50 to cool bet. Hit me up. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast. And we will talk to you tomorrow, Thursday. Getting close, Ailish. Those games, you're there. You're just
today's
like
hump day.
Yeah, but it's someday, but it's getting close. Maybe Friday tomorrow. But then it's the anxiety of the weekend is right on the horizon. Football, meaningful football. Leafs tonight, Raptors tonight. Loaded schedule. Thank you, sports guards. Sports guards. See you then.
Go, little rock star.